is a very beautiful, interesting Maisa. You can learn a lot from this story. Besides being a good Maisa, the main thing about these stories is that you can learn something for yourself to use. You get something for yourself to use in your life. There's so many things you can learn from Maises, from stories. Lahavdil by the Goyim, they have stories that are just, you know, it's called entertainment. You just like listen to it, you have a good time, and then goodbye, it's finished. By a Yiddish story, you take out something you could live with. It helps you in your life. So it's very, very kedai, it's very worthwhile to listen to these stories. Not with two ears, how many ears?
Three!
With three ears. With an extra ear to learn something. Well, 10 ears, I don't know if you can get, but 3 maybe. Okay, this story takes place in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos. A very halakha yid was walking on the road near his home on Shabbos. His Shabbos walk, it seems that it was after davening, before Kiddush. Either he was on his way home from shul to make Kiddush, or he's just taking a little kind of an extra walk around because it's such a beautiful, gorgeous day. A blue sky, a little bit of breeze, and the plants, the trees, the bushes, the fruits, the flowers, everything looked beautiful and smelled delicious. It was that time of year that a lot of things were in bloom. And if you were ever in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, actually outside of Eretz Yisrael, you can sometimes smell delicious smells, but Eretz Yisrael, something is especially sweet about those smells. And we're talking a long time ago when there was even a bigger bracha in the land. So you can imagine it was a very beautiful and wonderful time that this man was walking. Then it seems that he had his own fields, and he came to his own grape vines, his own vineyards. In other words, he had fields that he owned himself called vineyards of grape trees, grape vines. And now he was looking at his own fields. It seems now at this time of year, the grapes were not yet ripe. They were not yet full and grown. But still, he was looking to see in his vineyard. He was passing by. And all of a sudden he noticed in the fence was a big hole. There was a big hole in his fence. A big, big hole. Something had happened, or something had knocked into it, that it was broken in a very, very, first of all, a place near the road that was very, very easy to go right through the fence into the field. Now, what difference does it make? I'll tell you. First of all, there were different kinds of wild animals running around, and you want to keep them out of the vineyard because they'll eat up your grapes. Different kinds of animals like rabbits or foxes. Well, I don't know if there were gorillas or wolves or whatever there were, but there were animals that could do a lot of damage if they get into your grape vines and your vineyards and your grapes. So you have the fence to keep them out. And you also want to keep out, if chas v'shalom, there might be a robber, a thief, that might go in. I mean, there were such things even back then, of course. People that might not be so honest, and they're traveling down the road, and they see a fence with a hole in it, and they say, oh, look, I'll go right in and take a whole bunch of grapes. Now, this yid, as he's watching and looking at this hole in his fence, he starts to think, oi, I have to fix it. I have to fix it before my grapes get fully grown and ripe and the wild animals will get in there, or the thieves, chas v'shalom. I have to fix my fence. Oh, yeah, I can't do it today. It's Shabbos. I'll have to do it tomorrow. I have to get wood. I have to get tools. I have to get nails or screws or wire, whatever I need to fix it. Oh, where am I going to get it? I have to go to Yankel to get the wood. And somebody borrowed my tools. I have to get it. All of a sudden, the Yid became very upset at himself. Hey, what am I doing? It's Shabbos. I'm thinking about fixing my fence on Shabbos. I'm making plans for after Shabbos, how I'm going to fix my fence. Now, Ken Alech, he did not fix his fence. He didn't really do anything. He didn't really do a malacha. He did not really do a malacha. But Ken Alech, even the way you think on Shabbos should be different. Not only what you do or how you speak, even your thinking is supposed to be in a halakha way on Shabbos. And this yid said, the way I was thinking for the past few minutes, I broke the spirit of Shabbos. I broke the halakha of Shabbos inside of my head by thinking about after Shabbos how I'm going to fix it. My thinking was not halakha as it should be for Hashem. Oy, what did I do? As soon as I saw the hole, I should have said, look, oy, there's a hole in my fence. And of course, right away, a person's going to know they have to fix it. But any other thoughts about how to do it and when to do it and how he's going to get the things that he needs, he's got to push out of his mind. What's it going to help on Shabbos to think about these things? He can't do anything about it. And he became very upset at himself. I broke the spirit of Shabbos in my thoughts by thinking all kinds of different things about how I'm going to fix the fence. And he left that place. Of course, he couldn't do anything to fix it on Shabbos. And he went home for Kiddush to be with his family. And the Shabbos went by. And now it came Moitzoi Shabbos. He made Havdalah. And what's after Havdalah? Are you allowed to do Malacha? Okay, I mean, after you say Ma'ariv, and you say Atachanan Tanu, okay, that's a time that's already permitted in Malacha. And especially after Havdalah, all Malachas are permitted. And some people say, if they're like kids, if they don't daven Shmoneh Esrei, or some other people, they say Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kedesh L'Choyl. How many times do you say Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kedesh L'Choyl? Some people say it three times. Then they're allowed to do malacha. You have to do something to separate between Shabbos and the weekday. Right after Havdalah, this Yid thinks about what happened on Shabbos. How he was thinking to fix the fence on Shabbos. And he broke the spirit of Shabbos. He broke the halakha of Shabbos with his thoughts. And he never did that before. He let himself go. Of course, we're talking about Ken Alech, a halakha yid here. And the yid decided he's not going to fix his fence at all. He's never going to fix that fence. He says, because I did that on Shabbos and I wasn't careful, I have to do some kind of tshuva. I have to feel bad and show Hashem that I'm sorry for what I did, and I do feel very bad. And he decided, Ken Alech, that he's never going to fix that fence. He's just going to let the hole be open, and whatever happens, happens. He deserves it. Now, Ken Alech, we're talking about a special yid on a very high level. Of course, he was allowed to go fix that fence. We're talking about a person in his inner feeling, in his heart, how he felt and what he did. And that's what he did. He did not fix the fence. He left it alone. He didn't do a thing. He didn't call Yankel for the wood. He didn't get his tools, his screws, Cornish. He let the hole be there. A big, gigantic hole right near the road. And the time went on, and he didn't even go to the field at all. He just had his workers go to the field, and he didn't mention a thing about the fence. And they probably weren't going to fix it if they weren't told. They were just paid workers to do different things, take care of the grapes. And they never mentioned it to him, so he said, look, the hole is there, finished. And he said, if the robbers come in, or the rabbits, or the foxes, or the wild animals, and eat up my grapes, that's the way it goes. What could I do? Raccoons, or gorillas, or bears, or elephants, whatever there were. Dinosaurs. I don't think there were dinosaurs, but anyway. Whatever it is. And this was really a Mesiras Nefesh, because this man was not rich. He was more poor than rich. His family just barely got by with what they made from the grapes when they sold them. That was their parnasa. And without that, they would have nothing. But he says, look, during Shabbos, I forgot about Hashem. I have to do something specially to put myself in Hashem's hands. I have to do something especially to put myself in Hashem's hands, to do tshuva for the time on Shabbos where I forgot about Hashem. I didn't pay attention to Hashem. And the time went by, the weeks went by, maybe even months. And finally it was time for the grapes to be picked. And the Yid decided he's going to go out to the fields to see what is left. And now was the time that his workers were going to go out to pick the grapes. And he didn't expect to see anything. He didn't expect to see anything left. He goes over to his fields, and as he gets close to them, he smells the delicious smell of grapes. Fresh grapes. It must not be from my fields. It must be from somebody else's vineyards. I don't think there's anything left in mine. He gets closer and he sees his vineyards, his vines, are full of the biggest, juiciest, most delicious, fattest, luscious, purple grapes that you ever saw in your whole time, in your whole life. More beautiful than any other time that he's ever seen his vineyards in any other year. I can't believe it. Look, all the grapes are there. Each one is perfect. Not even one was gone. How could it be? I mean, how could the rabbits and the foxes and the animals stop from going through the holes? Or Chas V'Shalom, the robbers. That hole was a gigantic hole. And he walked into the vineyard and he walked to the other end where the hole was. Because on his walk, he had gone on the road on the other side. And now he approached from the other side. And he goes, and all of a sudden, he comes to the fence, and he says, wait a minute. The hole was here. Where is that hole? And he noticed, all of a sudden, the reason he couldn't see the hole, there was a gigantic bush called a caper bush that had grown right in the place of the hole. And this kind of a bush is very thick. A lot of branches and leaves. Not a thin bush, but a very thick, big bush that plugged up the hole completely, just as good as a fence was there, if not better, that nothing can get through. And this caper bush was growing in front of the hole, blocking it. And that's the reason that nothing can get through. He said, Hashem, look what you did for me. A miracle. This is a nest. Kinalach, the end of the mice is this. Not only was he able to sell his beautiful grapes and make a good living for his family, and of course get stuck in, but you know what a caper bush is? It's a special bush that you can eat certain parts of it, and you can use every little part of that bush, and it's very expensive. Like you go to the market to buy vegetables, certain vegetables are very cheap, and certain vegetables are hard to find, and they're very expensive. The caper bush, when you cut it, and you put the right kind of seasoning and different kinds of things on it to make it taste good, it's very, very delicious, and it's very expensive because you can't find too many of them. So besides the grapes to go and sell in the marketplace, he took the caper bush that he cut down the caper bush, not the whole thing, because he left it in the bottom to grow more. And his wife fixed it the way they fixed these caper bushes to be able to eat the leaves and the sticks and all the different parts of it. And he was able to make so much money that not only they were just like a poor family, they became a very wealthy family. And each year this caper bush grew back. It grew back like it was before, even bigger. And when he picked his grapes, he was also able to use the caper bush. And he made a wonderful parnasa for his family after that, for the 120 years that he lived. Until, of course, he passed away and his kids also were able to use the caper bush and the fields. So we see Kenalach in the schus of his halakha feelings for Shabbos, and he was ready to give up. Instead, Hashem benched him with even more. What is Shabbos in the first place? Shabbos is a day that a Yid says, Hashem made the whole world, and on the seventh day he rested. And the same thing Hashem wants from people. 6 days we work, we're the little boss on the world, we do all kinds of things to our fields, and we do all kinds of malachas to change the world. And we can write, and we can build, and we can cut things, and we can nail things together, and we can make fires. We're a little boss on the world, but we have to realize we're only a boss for 6 days. And on the seventh day, we have to rest and not be a boss in the world. And remember that it's Hashem who's the big boss and who takes care of the whole world. Now, what upset this Yid so much is that on Shabbos, he's thinking about how he's a boss, how the man, he has got to fix the fence. He forgot about Hashem. He forgot about how Hashem takes care of the whole world. Hashem is really the big boss and takes care of the whole world. And a person has to stop working on the seventh day to remember that. And he forgot about that. So he said, I have to do something special to remember that I'm not a boss at all. Hashem is the big boss. I'm not going to fix my fence at all. As a reward for that, for putting himself in Hashem's hands with such an emunah, what did Hashem do? He mamash showed the man how he is the boss in the whole world. That he made that bush grow totally in an unexpected way. And he helped that man. Even though the man didn't do anything, Hashem did it for him. Because he had complete faith, complete emunah, that Hashem was the boss in the world. And Hashem showed him that. And it says, whoever keeps the Shabbos watches over the person. The man specially kept the Shabbos, and Hashem specially took care of the man. One evening, a young man came home to his mother and father. He says, Mother and Father, I have good news. I met a nice young woman, and we're going to be married. Isn't that wonderful? And the mother and father said, Mazel tov, son. That's great news. The son says, Well, I don't know if you should wish me mazel tov. What do you mean? I mean, you said you're going to become... What do you mean? You said you're going to be married. You met a nice girl. It's a wonderful thing for the parents to find out their son is going to be married. Why shouldn't we say Mazel Tov, son? Well, mother and father, the girl is not Jewish. What? The girl is not Jewish? What do you mean the girl is not Jewish? Exactly what I said, mother and father. The girl is not Jewish. The girl that I want to marry is not Jewish, so I don't know if you want to say to me, Mazel Tov. Maybe you should say, congratulations. But son, we don't understand. We always thought you would marry a Jewish girl, because we're a Jewish family. Well, that's what you thought, but that's not exactly what's going to be, because the girl is not Jewish. Kenalach, the parents were so broken, so upset. And they try speaking to their son. Don't you realize, son, that a Jewish boy should marry a Jewish girl? Yeah, but I met a girl that's not Jewish, and that's the one I want to marry. But son, please. And they're talking, and they're trying to explain, and they're begging, and they're saying this, and they're saying that, and nothing helps. The boy has made up his mind. He wants to marry the girl that's not Jewish. And the parents are crying, and the parents are, please, explaining to the son. That the parents are crying, and they're trying to explain how a Jew should marry a Jew, but the boy is not listening, he's not interested. And they say, please, maybe you'll speak to the rabbi. Please, go speak to the rabbi in the shul on the corner. No, I don't want to speak to the rabbi. He's just going to say the things that you're saying. He's going to lecture me. And he's going to say this and he's going to say that. I'm not interested. And the parents were so broken. And the boy went to his room. And the father went to the shul on the corner. He did not go there every morning, and he didn't go there every afternoon or every evening. He went there once in a while, but he knew the rabbi, and he told the rabbi the problem. Our son, he came home and he says he wants to marry a goy. He's made up his mind. I can't even tell you how broken, how heartbroken we are. And we asked him to come to speak to you. He won't speak to you. He doesn't want to come here. He doesn't want to hear lectures and explanations. That's what our son says. The rabbi says to the father, ask your son if he would please come to me in the shul just for 5 minutes. And I will not speak to him. I will not lecture him. I will not give him speeches. Tell him I won't even say a word. All I want him to do is come to the shul for 5 minutes, and after 5 minutes, he can go home. That's all I'm asking of him, just a chance to be together with him in the shul for 5 minutes. And I won't even say one word. Please tell that to your son. The father goes home. He goes to the room of his son, and he says, son, father, I don't want to hear you anymore. I don't want to hear any more lectures and speeches and explanations. But son, I was just in the shul by the rabbi. I don't want to hear the rabbi. He's also going to tell me things and he's going to give me speeches. No, son, please, let me just tell you this. Please, for the sake of your father and mother and yourself, do us one favor. Before you marry this girl, the rabbi says he would like to see you, please, in the shul for 5 minutes. He says he won't say a word to you. He won't make any speeches. He won't say even one word to you. He just wants you to come to the shul and sit there for 5 minutes with him, and then you can leave after 5 minutes. And he says he won't even say one word. The boy opens the door to the room. Father, I don't understand. Why does he want to see me for 5 minutes? He won't even say a word. The father says, I don't know. But please, just do this one last thing for your father and mother and for yourself. And the boy says, well, I guess it can't hurt. I'm going to go and sit there for 5 minutes and come home and the rabbi won't even say one word. What's the big deal? Okay. This much I'll do. The boy, the young man, goes down now to the shul on the corner. And he goes into the shul, and sure enough, the shul is empty, except for the rabbi sitting there. The rabbi is sitting there on a bench in the shul. He doesn't say a word. He just motions to the boy to come and sit down. The young man sits down on another bench across from the rabbi, and they're both sitting there. In an empty, quiet shul. And they're just sitting there. The rabbi doesn't say a word. 1 minute goes by. 2 minutes. 3 minutes. 4 minutes, one more minute left, and the boy is going to go home. And he thinks to himself, this is ridiculous. I mean, why should the rabbi ask me to come to the shul? And he's not going to say a word. And all of a sudden, the young man says to the rabbi, Rabbi, I don't understand. Why did you call me here? Is there something you want me to do or what? The rabbi says, well, you didn't want to hear me speak, so I don't want to tell you anything. So I'm not. So the boy says, but you know, I mean, so why do I come here? Isn't there something I'm supposed to do here? The rabbi says, look, now that you asked, maybe I will ask you to do one thing in this last minute that you're here. Please go over there to the Arna Kodesh and open up the curtain to the Arna Kodesh. If you would do that one small thing for me, I would be very happy. The young man stands up, he goes over to the Arna Kodesh and he pushes aside the curtain. There's a half a minute left. He says, Rabbi, that's all? The rabbi says, listen, if you want to do something else, if you don't mind, open up the door to the Arna Kodesh. He opens up the door to the Arna Kodesh, and of course, right there was the Sefer Torah. And the boy says, Rabbi, I have a few seconds left. Anything else? This is very easy. The rabbi says, look, if you don't mind, take out the Sefer Torah. Just take it out and hold it. The boy says, but, I mean, what, we're not going to read from the Torah, are we? It's not Shabbos or Yom Tov, is it? No, the rabbi says, just, if you don't mind, take it out and hold it. The young man takes out the Sefer Torah and he holds it. He's holding it. A few seconds left. Rabbi, before I leave, is there anything else you want me to do? The rabbi says, yes, there's one last thing I'd like you to do. Throw the Sefer Torah down on the ground, on the floor, and spit on it. What? Did I hear correctly? Rabbi, what did you ask me to do? Throw the Sefer Torah down on the floor and spit on the Sefer Torah. And the boy starts to shake. Rabbi, how could I do such a terrible thing? I would never do such a thing to the Sefer Torah. And he's clutching the Sefer Torah and he's shaking and he's almost crying. How can you ask me to do such a thing? The rabbi says to him, if you marry that girl who's not Jewish, it is just like you're taking the Sefer Torah and you're throwing it down on the ground and you're spitting on the Sefer Torah. That's what you're doing if you marry that girl. And the boy put back the Sefer Torah in the Arna Kodesh. He closed the door to the Arna Kodesh. He closed the door to the Arna Kodesh. He pulled the curtains to the Arna Kodesh. He walked out of the shul. It was 5 minutes that he was there. And he goes home. He walks in the door. His parents are sitting there at the table. And he says, Mother, Father, I've decided not to marry the girl. I'm going to find a Jewish girl to marry. And of course,